Youth Sports Now presents Your Peak Performance, topics that support the well-being of your young athlete, presented by Peak Performance Physical Therapy in East Rochester.
We are back on Youth Sports Now, and it is time for the Peak Performance Physical Therapy and Sports Training segment, and our good friend Mike Naparella joins us again. Hey, Mike, how's it going?
Doing great, Greg. How you doing?
Hey, you know, Mike, we've been talking about this, and some may say, well, you know, we've been talking about it a lot, and we really need to continue talking about the topic of ACL injuries, because it's a huge topic, almost as big as this whole concussion topic. So we finished up last week's segment on the ACL injuries, and we began to talk about the use of protocols. And as a patient or even a parent, I'd think that there's some sense of security in knowing that you guys at Peak Performance and other physical therapists, that they're doing what the surgeon wants done and they're doing it the right way. Am I correct in that?
Yeah, absolutely, Greg. You know, as we began to talk last week about this same topic, you know, you've got to be on the same page as the doctor. Orthopedic surgeons, they're incredibly intelligent. They're caring professionals. They've been through really extensive training. I mean, think about it. Can there be much more trust that you'd ever put in a set of humans than to have a team of people put you to sleep, put these precise cuts into your skin, and make changes to your anatomy? You bet. I mean, patients, they want to know that you're on the same page as the person who just did all that cutting and drilling and screwing things back together for you. So, and we've got patients even who the surgeon actually gives them a copy of the protocol, so they're sort of following along, you know, in time as we are.
So with this protocol, you know, obviously the parents, you know, Mike, want to know, and of course the athletes too, want to make these good decisions about who to see for these sort of injuries. So when we talk about surgery like this, you know, no pun intended, is it a knee-jerk reaction that you might be able to think that whoever, you know, has the time, whoever has the best appointments, that they're the ones they should go to? And does this ACL surgery thing come down to if you saw the best doctor and the best PT, then you're going to be back the fastest?
Yeah, that's a great question, you know, because you're totally right. We sort of, and we've talked about this before, we sort of live in this microwave drive-through window sort of society where this idea of being the best or even being advanced often means who got to the finish line first or who did it in the shortest time possible. And sometimes we can make that mistake about, you know, choosing a physician or choosing a physical therapist, that quicker is always better. You know, I mean, orthopedics, there's been this increasing trend, even in the research, to recognizing that, and it's not with all injuries or surgeries, but, you know, in a lot of cases, in ACLs included, that early mobilization versus, you know, like prolonged bed rest and being very conservative and very early strengthening and other exercises often leads to an earlier return to getting back to life, you know, whether that be a sport or whether it just be day-to-day activities. And even for the more mature population, it's about getting back to work. So it's true that sometimes, you know, being more advanced means that you can get back quicker, but you got to be really careful of swinging that pendulum too far. And there's a risk of sort of this, you know, I can name that tune and you can fill in the blank. I can get you back in 3 months. And, you know, someone else says, well, I'll get you back in 2.5 months. And we've got to be very careful that those time frames of becoming shorter and shorter and compromising recovery, because sometimes we as a society look for, you know, it equaling advanced if you're doing it in a shorter time. So a surgeon who offers, you know, the earliest return to playing time, or the therapist who says, you know, we can get you back to sports practice at, you know, whatever time, we don't want to be playing the name that tune game. So those people who are doing that aren't necessarily the best or more advanced. They may be, but they may not be. And there's really a fine line between looking at the evidence that's out there, you know, developing a sound protocol or a plan for the recovery. You know, we got to have that concern for waiting for the biology of healing to take place. But, and I really want to emphasize this, making sure that we treat every single injured athlete, whether it's surgical or non-surgical, and in the case we're talking about today, Greg, ACL reconstructions, that we treat them individually. I'll give you a quick example here. I had a lacrosse player over the summer. We'll call him Johnny. And he was up at the school turf, and he's doing these multi-directional hopping drills and this deceleration training for unexpected reactions that we had him working on. And he was up there with another athlete, a friend. We'll call her Mary. And she had an ACL, you know, fixed just a few weeks around the time when Johnny had. And she was doing some running drills, and she was doing some basic agility-type stuff. And she was asking Johnny, you know, what are you doing? And they started talking about their ACL rehab drills and what each were doing and getting ready to go back to sports. But she hadn't really worked on the single leg landing. She hadn't really worked on those at-risk positions. She was just doing sort of this protocoled sort of basic agility stuff. And she hadn't done any reaction work. And she was really surprised at, you know, why are you doing those things where you're having to react suddenly? You know, she'd point her finger in one direction or she'd call out, switch when he's doing a drill, and he had to react to that. And she wasn't doing anything like that. She was doing all these pre-planned sort of drills, standard things. And Johnny, you know, he came back telling me he was even worried about her because she's getting ready to go back to play, and he could see, you know, even as just an athlete, he wasn't really a skilled a coach or a therapist or an athletic trainer, he could see that she wasn't really ready. So we have to be really careful of living on a protocol. So at Peak Performance, we're totally happy to get people back as quickly as possible. And we want to do that for everyone's sake. We don't want to delay it longer than it needs to be, but it never can be at the compromise of quality. And so we're not in the contest of doing it the quickest. We want to do it the best. And sometimes, you know, the challenge is that oftentimes a physician or a therapist will offer out to somebody, hey, you're going to get back in 5 months to playing or 6 months or something like that. But we really want to be careful of getting in a position where we have to eat our words. Tell that patient later on, you know what, physically you're actually not ready, even though it's 5 months. Or, you know, we're going to follow the protocol and let him go back, maybe in spite of poor test results. You know, we can't have that. And or another case, as we've talked about in the show before, Greg, maybe not even testing him the right way. So we get this false sense of security because we don't think outside the box enough. We get a basic strength test. They look like they passed, but it wasn't functional enough. And the athlete's actually going back at risk because we didn't prep them right.
Well, you know, it's interesting, Mike, because it's not about the ACL, but to your exact point about, you know, getting back in time, I was listening to some other radio commentators today, and they were talking about the injury to the Green Bay Packers quarterback Aaron Rodgers, and they were questioning whether it's the shoulder or whether it's the clavicle or whether it's the collarbone. And it was amazing to me that these experts that are sports broadcasters were, first of all, making all these speculations, and secondly, before they even knew what the injury was, they had experts on talking to the experts about how long is he going to be out? Is this going to be a 3-week injury or a 6-week, or is this, you know, a season ending? I know it's not with ACL, but it was amazing to me that they were talking about that. So typically with you and with an ACL reconstruction, you know, patients always want to know when they're likely to go back to playing. Do you give them a time frame, or is it very, very much customized to who that athlete is?
Well, in terms of giving them a time frame, it's sort of yes and no. I mean, if for example, this is a surgeon that gave us a protocol, and we have this sort of time frame that they've put out on paper in terms of really what we would think of it as the biology of healing. You know, when's the earliest I would allow somebody to do whatever? And let's say we're talking about starting the running and agility program, and then from there we can sort of imagine how long might it take for someone to actually get back to the point they actually do drills and practice. And then from there, you know, what's the actual first time they'd be allowed in scrimmaging where contact and reaction to other bodies and multiple players on the field of the court would happen. So we can sort of anticipate that. Well, we'll let them know when that physician said, here's the earliest you could begin that activity. But really what we want to tell them is, here's the thing, it's not a contest of how quickly you go back. When you go back, I want you to stay back. I don't want you to get excited about going back and then really have not prepared you well enough. But time has passed. And based on time, we've all committed to, hey, you're going to play by 5 months. Well, if we're too hard on that, we're too specific about that, then we can get into trouble because they may not have the strength or the dynamic balance or the reaction ability. And then when they go out, we sort of rob them of the excitement that they had because we have to pull them back out because either they're hurting again or they're just doing poorly, or we see that their other leg's starting to hurt because it's starting to cheat for the ACL leg that really wasn't ready yet. So what we'll do, Greg, is we'll let them know what that earliest time frame might be with the caveat that there's a lot of tests they need to pass first. So we would say it's much more of a criterion-based return versus just purely some time frame on a protocol. And we're very quick to be on the phone with the surgeons, and certainly we have paperwork that we're sending, reevaluation reports that we do, when we get closer to those time frames, so that, you know, we're all functioning off of the best data we can provide in terms of, hey, someone might have really good strength, but now when we do a hop drill or a lunging test or a change of direction movement, and we see they can't control that knee, well, that's really critical. It doesn't matter that you've passed the strength test. You have to also have some dynamic balance, some control. We can't have you going back with your knee twisting and buckling in weird directions, but in the simple terms, hey, your quads and hams are strong again. Well, that's just not good enough. So we've got to make sure we're thorough in that, and that's why we never want to base something, you know, purely just on time.
So, you know, Mike, there's always good and bad in everything that we do, and from a PT's perspective, what's the good and the bad of these protocols? I know you addressed this in your blog from last week's show, but let's tell our listeners again the good and the bad.
Well, yeah, you know, I mean, in the protocols, you know, surgeons, you know, they use different graphs. You know, they have different time frames for recovery. They have different even exercises or activities that some will allow and not allow. Certainly, some will start at 3 months running. Some will wait till five. Some allow sports by, let's say, 5 months. Others might make you wait till seven, even from a simple biology standpoint. So there's not full agreement among all of them. And so we really need to respect that each one may have their own approach to how they'd like this recovery to go. And so it's critical that, like we said earlier, that we are on the same page as them. You know, they went and did all this work to fix that knee. In this case, we're talking about ACLs. And we've really got to respect, you know, what time frame they want for healing and when they want certain forces to be seen by that tissue or not. So, you know, on the good side, it really helps us tremendously when we see a protocol because it gives me a reference point for those earliest time frames they might let somebody do something. I'll give you an example. If a protocol were to say, hey, you're not allowed to climb stairs using your surgery leg until 4 weeks out after your ACL was done, well, that really helps us prepare. And so if that young athlete is, you know, at 2.5 or 3 weeks out, I can begin doing things knowing that, hey, listen, a regular stair is about 8 inches high in most cases. And we know that climbing up the stairs is the safest place to start versus going down. Going up the stairs, your hip and butt muscles, you know, get to be a best friend to the knee. And going downstairs, the knee is sort of left on its own a lot more. The hip isn't as much of a helper. So we would allow somebody to climb upstairs first. Well, I certainly don't want that athlete to all of a sudden walk into the doctor's office at a four-week follow-up, and they've been walking on flat ground, and all of a sudden the doctor says, well, on my protocol, you're allowed to climb stairs now. So all of a sudden, the athlete goes from walking on flat surfaces to now doing a single leg squat motion through maybe 90 or more degrees of motion to climb up and down the stairs, depending on how tall they are. That's a big change. Well, if I know that from their protocol, I can begin preparing them with 2-inch step-ups and 4-inch step-ups. And in those weeks preceding the point where the doctor is going to release them potentially, or the protocol says, hey, this is now the first time where I would let you climb up a stair if you're able to do it well. Well, I can help you in some lower-level activities to prep that. But, you know, the challenge is for physical therapists, I think, is we have to be really careful of getting too reliant on the protocol because we can't have the physical therapist who's guiding your rehab become really complacent, and then you don't start to – you're not thinking for yourself all the time. So, I mean, there's no way a written protocol can account for every single exercise choice or every exercise variation that's needed. You know, they can't account for the changes that would go from, in the very beginning, we're going to use really light loads, we're going to do a lot of repetitions, and then at some point we're going to transition to higher loads and lesser repetitions. Well, when do you do that? Well, the protocol doesn't follow every single individual's physiology and biology. One person may have a lot of swelling and inflammation. We have to do that more slowly. Someone else may lose their swelling really quickly, have very little pain. They're doing awesome. We can push the envelope a bit more on them. So the protocols really can't allow for that. We have to be really careful of just sitting there and looking at dates on a piece of paper and then doing things based on time and not based on how they're doing. And certainly, you know, the biomechanical things that we talk about are a huge thing. So, I mean, at Peak Performance, we're not looking at this like we're rehabbing, you know, just an ACL. We're really thinking of it as, you know, this is someone's body. You know, it's a system that we're rehabbing. And we've got to get beyond just these microscopic, telescopic approaches of what exercises and things can I do to the ACL. And we have to remember this triangular, three-dimensional approach. We're thinking mind, body, and spirit. You know, we know we're dealing with the body. But we also, Greg, and this isn't on the protocol, right, but we also have to remember that we're dealing with the mental side. We've got to make sure that we're educating that patient. They've got to learn things about their knee. They've got to learn things about what is a risk and what's not a risk. I can't have an ACL kid, and we're talking about ACLs. This is true of everybody. You can't have a kid going back to that early sport practice, and I'm not there to hold their hand. The athletic trainer may not be there to hold their hand. But in the middle of a practice, they've got some decisions to make as to whether a certain drill is appropriate or not. And we can't list out every single drill the coach may come up with and tell them, you know, hey, that's appropriate, hey, that's not appropriate. So there's a mental side where we want to educate them. They have to learn things about that. Well, that's not on the protocol. And another thing that's not on the protocol certainly is the spirit side of it, that emotional side, that confidence, the ability to go out there and sort of manage that balance between being a little cocky and being disregarding, which we don't want, but also being too fearful. You know, we can't have an athlete going out there afraid that every move they're going to make, they're going to blow their ACL out again. And so there's a lot of things that we're trying to manage through this, and all those things just aren't, you know, they're not there in the protocols.
Well, Mike, you know, these protocols, I think it's so very important, and we may have to even continue this because I do know that we've got some questions on our website about protocols, and we may want to discuss this again next week with just maybe not just with ACLs, but protocols in general, so that the patients, the athletes, the parents can all understand this a little bit better. And we'll make sure that those questions from our website are, in fact, answered on these protocols. Mike, real quick, tell our listeners as we end the Peak Performance segment how to get a hold of you, both website and phone number, and where you're located.
Absolutely. Well, we're at 161 East Commercial Street in East Rochester. And so it's very nicely situated, about a mile literally down, coming off the exit from the 490 East Rochester exit. You come all the way down the street. You're right at our parking lot where that street ends. And you just make a quick left and a right, and you're in our parking lot. You can see the building from the end of the street there. And so they can give us a call at 218-0240. That's our phone number. That's 218-0240. And if they want to learn a little bit more about us and how we do things, they can check out our website at www.peakptrochester.com.
Great. Well, Mike Naparella from Peak Performance Physical Therapy and Sports Training. As always, great information. Mike, thank you very much, and we'll continue our conversations on helping these athletes and their parents make the smartest decisions possible. And we will see you again next week, buddy.
Take care, Greg.
Thanks a lot. Bye-bye. When we come back, some final thoughts from my dugout.